proudest day and the proudest time in the seat of a rally car, because that day and that hour and those minutes, I got the bit between my teeth. You know, I really stood up and was counted and said, this is not getting away. I remember when we pulled on our helmets and Donald says to me, what are we doing? I said, we're going for gold, Barrett. That's all we said. I can still picture that run. That was just the best run ever.
Welcome along to Crunching Gears, the Rally Podcast, Season 3, Episode 20. We're going to talk rallying once again, and we're joined by Connor, as always, and Luke Barry. Lads, you're both very welcome along. And before we get going, I suppose, could you please like, share, rate, subscribe? All those things make a huge difference. And this week, we're going to look back at Monaghan. We're going to also look back at the Safari Rally, which was a couple of weekends ago. And then we're going to look forward to Rally Nuts. And we'll also get a chance to catch up with one of the engineers from the Hyundai team. So, Connor, I suppose we should start with Monaghan last weekend. The Monaghan Grand Prix, once again, lived up to its title, epic rally.
Oh, look, flat out sprint. It was fantastic to follow, and got lucky with the weather. It all stayed good despite the threats of rain. And
there was a few sure skipped it past, but nothing too bad, you know.
Nothing major. It didn't cause a lot of problems with retire choice.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, and look, I don't know, were you able to keep track on how the proceedings were going in Monaghan last weekend for yourself?
Not as much as normal, so I'm not going to profess to be an expert, but. I was certainly seeing how close the times were between the two obvious pre-event favourites. And it was actually really nice to see the two of them at a proper race, because it's actually been a while where, A, they've both done the same rally consistently, and secondly, they've both been near the top and able to dispute something between each other. But obviously, very important result for one particular brother who managed to up a bit of level, because there were 3-3 on Monaghan wins going into this one, weren't they? And it's now 4-3 in Josh's favour. So I'm sure in a couple of years' time, when they return, Sal will be back trying to upset and sort of re-level that score.
Yeah, like Connor, Sam said at the weekend, you know, like they go back now to Burr now in a couple of weeks, and the national championship will take precedent again. Like Sunday was all about the Monaghan rally, the championship, the points. Didn't really matter.
That's it. There was nothing on the line apart from bragging rights on the home event. And like it was close, like 11 seconds between the two of them in the end.
Yeah, and like, you know, Josh really only pulled it out on the last loop. Like up to that, there was nothing between them, you know, like an absolutely epic battle. And then, like, you know, the Class 14 guys, oh my God, like that was some race. Like that, there was, like, I think after three stages, the top 12 recovered by 40 seconds. And like Daniel McKenna was just supreme on the day.
Oh, look, fantastic. And to get seventh overall as well, like, you know, really was. It shows you that, you know, the ability that Daniel has. You know, we don't see him in the rally car that often nowadays, but like he hasn't lost an ounce of talent.
That's for sure.
Can I just quickly butt in here as well? McKenna's actually one of the ones I did see, because there was actually I know Art McCarrick's got a bit of I was going to call it a Twitter, it's an X thread now, isn't it? Of like basically classic onboards of rallying, which he's been going for years, and I saw he put Daniel in there at the weekend, and I had a watch of that, and it was impressive. Like, yeah. It was some steering, as we know. Yeah, really interesting to watch.
Anybody that hasn't watched that, you know, I highly recommend go and watch it. It's just a masterclass, you know, of driver and co-driver, and, you know, how to just make a stage work for you.
Just incredible to watch him in action. Genuinely, you know, like you can never get enough on boards of Daniel's.
That's for sure. So anyway, I think we'll hear enough of us. So I think first of all, we'll catch up with Josh Moffat, then that'll run into Sam, and then that'll run into Eddie Doherty. It's just I caught up with them at the finish. Josh, you're just after winning the Monaghan Rally. That was some day's battling.
Yeah, for sure. Now Sam made it tough for us. Now it was nip and tuck there really all day, and the last service there was only about a second in it, and thankfully we just seemed to make a bit of a gap there for the last three stages, and you know, getting the bonus point in the last stage, I'm sure will help towards the end of the year for the championships. So it's been a good day, good race and all around, and you know, fair play to the club there. The stages and everything was top class there. So
yeah, like you have to give it to Monaghan Motor Club. Once again, they put on a top class event, haven't they?
Yeah, they always do, to be fair. There's a lot of people really into it, and put a mega effort in there. So great day all around, and the weather was good to us in the most part. We had one or two sort of wet stages there in the middle of the day, but we got through them okay.
Yeah, and like credit to you know your own company Combilift there as well too. What a fantastic service facility there as well.
Yeah, look, I think it turned out well. It was I suppose it was nice for us to have it there, and the club asked us earlier on in the year, and I'm sure that the car park and that was there, so there was no issues there. So yeah, that was nice to have it.
Yeah, and like you know your fourth rally now in the Citroen, and your first one, do you feel that it's coming to you now?
Yeah, I think we're probably starting to drive it a bit today, like the way we used to drive the Hyundai. So I think we're getting there. Like we keep changing stuff and trying to improve it in different conditions. So yeah, look at we're getting there, and I'm sure we'll work on it even more.
Yeah, because like the Hyundai was fitting you like a glove. You know, you'd been rallying it now for what 3 years, so like yeah. It was second nature. You knew what it was going to do before it even done it nearly a lot.
Yeah, exactly. We just got to the point where we knew it so well, and there's different conditions or different weather that like we knew how to adapt the car to make it best for it. So yeah, look at that's what we're working away with the Citroen and trying to get to the same stage, and I suppose we believe it's a better car all around. So we just need to get the setup and things to work the way where we need them to.
Yeah, and then next up now will be Killarney, the next round of the Tarmac Championship.
It will burn in 2 weeks.
Oh, burn 2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll be battling it out there again with Sam. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and that, do you believe that keeps you match fit then, having, you know, the doing the National Championship in between events?
Ah, it definitely does, especially whenever you have somebody like Sam there pushing you on and keeping you going there and working hard for it. So yeah, look at it, it all helps you.
Yeah, and everybody involved in the National Championship, these are great rallies as well too, like, you know, like this was a great rally for, you know, it looks a really good rally there as well too, but looking by what's been put up online so far.
Yeah, look at the National Championship, the sort of one day format, one day recce, one day rally, it suits me down to the ground. It means I don't have to leave work during the week or on Friday. You just head off Saturday morning or Friday night. So the format works well for me, and I always enjoy them. So
Sam, second overall here today. You give your brother some race today.
We tried our best. Great race, and you know, really enjoyed the whole day. Bit disheartening now to be so close and then just gets away from you. But you know, I think we can say we had a good race all weekend and delighted with it.
Yeah, and like the Hyundai now, you've seemed to have clicked with something there now. You know, at the start you could see you weren't just getting the feel for it. This last couple of events now, there's just something that has changed there.
Well, yeah, look at the car, getting the grips of it, and you know, there's a few upgrades coming for the car now at the end of this month, which will make a bit of a difference to it as well. So yeah, definitely we have the handling part of it definitely a lot better than we originally had, and yeah, let's hope the upgrades just give us another wee bit.
And then, like, you know, what an event here today, like, wasn't that fantastic? You know, the format, the stages, everyone just seemed to work really well.
Yeah, look at the stages and the way it was ran, even down to the guards keeping the traffic to a minimal there, everything was a credit to the motor club and the way it was ran. So yeah, look, it's one to be watched from other clubs to see how it's done down here in Monaghan.
That's for sure. And that makes it 3-3 now between the two brothers.
No, it's 4-3 to Josh.
Oh, 4-3 now, yeah, so yeah, he's the bragging rights now for another one.
2 years to the next one, unfortunately, but we'll see.
And then, when next for your sixth? Burr now?
Yeah, Burr in 2 weeks, and then is it Cardo after that, maybe, so... Uh-huh. That'll be our plan, so let's see how it goes.
So Eddie, third overall here in Monaghan today. You said you were going to build the pace event by event. You have to be happy with the way it's going so far.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely another step forward for us. We're after learning a lot and brakes and suspension and stuff like that again. So I think any day you finish probably third to two Maffa brothers in Monaghan is a good day. So really enjoyed it. Looking forward there now to our next event in Killarney in 3-4 weeks time, and then on to Carlow then to continue National Championship. So
yeah, and like, is that your first time in a full dry rally in Skoda now as well?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Today was our first full dry rally, so yeah, definitely a lot learned, and we can really see what these yokes can do. So no, looking forward to it again.
Yeah, and like, is it like amazing that you know the way they handle the dry and the corners, the speed you can carry?
Yeah, it's the speed you can carry, I suppose, compared to the Escort. You're waiting for this big bang of power that's not there, but threes and fours and stuff like that. The pace you can carry is savage.
And as you say, then like finishing third behind the two Moffat. Like that's a good day's rally.
Definitely, yeah, for a first time in Monaghan, and I think we'll definitely like to be back to stages of our class, and in fairness to the organisers, was bang, bang, bang each day. So, no, look forward to it.
Yeah, and you know, as you say, like, great event by the club as well too. Like, compact route, good stages, great service area and all that.
Yeah, and even the spectators. I was saying there today, like, I don't think I've seen spectators like that inside a service area in probably a year or two. So, and even at the finish ramp here there now, it's like the whole hotel is full. So, no, it's great. It's great to, like, it's great to see what it's all about. And left to be back for the Monaghan Grand Prix, I think.
So thanks there to the three lads there. It's nice to catch up with them at the finish. And I also got a chance then to catch up with Daniel McKenna for a wee bit more of an in-depth look at how his thoughts on how he felt to begin with. Daniel, yourself and Andrew had some run on Sunday there in Monaghan Rally. Like, it was epic from start to finish.
Yeah, we did. Hey, we're delighted with the way we got to, you know, to get top modified. So if you had told us that on Sunday morning, we probably wouldn't have believed you. But, you know, two busy households at the moment, with new kids and stuff coming in, and we just don't get out as often as we'd like to. And I mean, it doesn't do anything when you don't have the seat time. There's a bit of rustiness. Takes a couple of stages usually. That's what we've experienced over the last maybe 2 years. Takes a couple of stages for us to get up to speed, and the guys are usually gone. But thankfully, yeah, we're quick out of the blocks. And but yeah, the battle was unreal. Like, every, you know, I don't know, suppose you could, you were saying the top, after three stages, like, the top 12 overall were only separated by 40 seconds, never mind the modifieds. The modifieds, like, was only tenths of seconds, you know, in every stage. No man was any faster than 1 or 2 seconds, which was some battling, like, you know. So, yeah, it was great. A very, very enjoyable event.
Yeah, because, like, you know, Monaghan has become this, the Monaghan Grand Prix it's referred to, you know. It has become, like, the one, you know, there's Donegal, there's Monaghan and Carlow, the Mark II Challenge, and those are the events that you want to win, you know, the two-wheel drive section of. And the entry that was there on Sunday was the cream of the cream of two-wheel drive.
Yeah, look at how there was 10 or 15 of the top modified guys in the country. There's probably 4 or 5 other guys there who, if you really wanted to have everybody there, and maybe you could throw David Bogie into the likes of the mix there. Some of the guys are committed to the Tarmac Championship, and some of the other guys are similar to ourselves, just picking and choosing events. But yeah, I think if you're beating any of them guys there on Sunday, you're able to beat anybody, I suppose, on any given day. But yeah, look at it. It has a competition, like, you know. And as I said, we didn't think we'd be on at the sharp end right away, you know, because, like, I was only out 5 months ago in Killarney, like, and wasn't driving terribly well, caught it in the wrong tyres, and you're just very rusty and stuff, and I was sort of maybe that in the back of my mind. But, and that's the thing, if you make one mistake, or if you won slack stage, like, and you drop 5 or 10 seconds, see, even just getting 5 seconds back, like, it's absolutely mental. Like, you have to put the whole thing on the line just to try and get that time reversed. Mm-hmm. And then, and no matter what you do, there's always probably someone, like, I don't, like, even though we come out on top there, like, I think we only maybe were fastest at it on 2 or maybe 3 of the 9 stages, you know. There was always actually, you know, David Moffat was sitting in fastest times, Tours was fastest, Desi Keane was fast in the first 2, then Egg was sitting a few fastest times as well. Like, you know, there's always, no matter how hard you're going, there's always actually someone going slightly harder than you most of the time as well.
Yeah, because, like, that is the thing. Like, it was the way that there was no clear favourite. It was, like, you know, every stage you were just, you know, because there were so many of you, like, there was, like, you know, Egg come in first and you were getting his time, and then there was a gap to the next modified, and, like, it was, like, every car come in, it was like, what's their time going to be? Where sometimes, you know, it's 1 or 2 comes in, or maybe 3, and after that, then, you know, the time started dropping off. But it wasn't like that at all on Sunday. It was like there was always somebody coming in and just, like, where the hell did that time, like, John O'Duggan, yeah, another man that's really come up to the top table now this last wee while as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, sure, like, you could be down at the 15th modified car on the road, like, yeah. Like, Michael Carbon started it now, and some of his times are fantastic, and this is only a second time out in the car, so yeah, he'll be one to watch in the future. And even some of the class 13 guys' times, like, you know, Young McIntyre and the Starlet and that, and Gary Cassidy had a great run, and, you know, mm-hmm, some of them class 13 guys are on serious pace as well. Like, you know, it's just, yeah, so it's fantastic. Like, it's fantastic to see, like, you know, the level that everyone's at. You know, me and Gary McPhillips were saying it too, like, you know, it's just everyone is just, to get the full enjoyment out of it now, everyone's putting in so much effort, like, and, like, to be dicing every stage, like, and there's only 0.1 of a second and 0.3 and 0.4, and the most is only ever 2 seconds. Like, it's some race, like, it's, probably frustrating if you're not on the right side of it, but very enjoyable when you're stuck in the middle of it. Like,
I can Richard and David Moffat up, like they're two M cars running side by side, and like they match each other to the tenth of a second over like a 10 kilometer stage, like, and that's unbelievable. If you set out to do it, you couldn't do it.
No, and like there was other stages then when two guys were matched as well. Like, you know, it's sort of stuff you'd see like in Formula One, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. the times that close. Like, but no, it was really, really enjoyable. It was a fantastic event, and we were glad now to come out on top of it. This time around.
For yourself and Andrew, did you just do anything different in the lead up to the event, or was anything different in the car, or was it just it felt comfortable right from the start?
No, we didn't really do anything different. I suppose I only came back there after a long layoff, and we put an awful lot of new stuff, like prototype stuff from the car, working along with Raymond Moore and Racing Rally, and working along with Philip Case with Dolan's dampers, and just took a bit of time to get that all in a nice place where we wanted it. So that was sort of the first 12 months. And then we started having the babies and the stuff coming along, which meant that it was more difficult to get out. So sort of when we got the car in the place where I wanted it, we weren't out often enough to be at the sharp end, you know, with the guys. So to answer your question, we didn't really do anything different. Like the car, we got a bit of a tidy up. I hit it a bit of a tip in Clarence Historics and back us into a bank, just got caught out in the conditions. And then the dampers got a rebuild and the engine got a bit of a check over. But no, the car, Bobby Sharkey's put the car together the same as any other way. We've made the notes the same as any other way. And one other thing as well, I suppose that's, I think I've seen some comments, maybe the guys are saying, like, this, you know, the Monaghan lads coming out on top of Monaghan, like, but we were doing the recce, and I commented to Andrew at the first loop, I said, should these stage may as well be in West Cork, because I haven't lived in Monaghan actually in 11 years. And apart from maybe a couple of kilometres of one of the stages, which is the same as the year we won it, I've never really done them stages before. Yeah. I probably actually had a better knowledge of the Clarny stages or West Cork. And so, like, you know, we would have made the notes and would have been driving to the notes no matter where it was, to be honest with you. Like, mm-hmm. So in terms of local knowledge, it didn't make much of a difference for me. And I don't even think that middle stage, that Silver Stream stage, I don't recall that ever being used. I don't think that was ever used, or maybe it might have been used bits and pieces in different directions. But yeah, that was a new stage that the Thomas Trainer picked there, like, which is fantastic stage. Like, yeah,
because even if you were living in Monaghan, it's like highly unlikely you'd even be driving them roads, because, like, you know, they were, you know, like they were, yes, they were close to the town, but they're not the roads that the normal traffic would be driving day in, day out anyway.
No, certainly not. Certainly a lot of the couple of local lads, but sure, the stages would be the man, like, to move around, to be down around maybe the Nublis area, or like there was a stage close to my house a couple of years ago when I was in England. I couldn't do the rally. And then there's other times that'd be out around Scotstown, or then I remember the rally years and years ago, they used to be based up in Castlevania and Carton Cross and that, like, you know, there'd be local lads up there know the stages. But we wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have any knowledge of them and stuff. So yeah, like, it's very little repetition, I don't think, when it comes to Monaghan. Maybe sort of similar to, like, the Harvest around Donegal. It moves around the different areas of the county. Yeah, mm-hmm. So, but don't know. What was your question again?
I
went away.
You felt comfortable right from the start, I suppose, and that's, like, whenever you feel comfortable, that you're able to push more then.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, the biggest thing. Like, whenever we did go to the events, then we just, for whatever one reason or another, we couldn't get a clean run. We might have a bit of a mishap with the car, or I'd make a silly mistake. You know, remember clipping a rock down in Killarney in the very first stage, about 2 mile in, and that put us out of the rally. Like, you know, simple thing after putting a load of effort in, or you know, silly little gremlins with the car. But yeah, so first stage was 100% clean, and we just carried on from there once we were in the hunt. It was, you know, and I felt comfortable, like, we were happy enough. But didn't really do anything different or special. It just happened the way it did.
The, you know, the end of the last stage, like, whatever, I don't know, glitch in the computer system, your time will come up online, and, like, that must have been, like, what was that, like, you must have felt the weight of the world on your shoulders for that. It probably only was 2 minutes, but it probably seemed like hours.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I wasn't too bothered. Like, me and Andrew crossed the line and shook hands. We're after doing the last probably 3 mile of stage with the wipers on flat out, and it was getting quite treacherous. And I knew the tourist was I think we had 7 seconds of a cushion going to that stage, and I knew Tourish was going really thick fast in that stage. He got into a really good rhythm. He was always taking time out of us in the first two times. And I was safe. Like, we had one moment, especially in the fast right-hander, where it was pissing rain, and she just snapped on me. And I was like, the last thing I want to do now is throw it all away, whatever. But come over the line, and I suppose we were probably thinking to ourselves, no, we didn't even say anything, it should be all right, you know, that sort of way. But the ultimate feeling was like we were just delighted to have a clean event and really, really enjoyed the stages. So honestly, I wasn't that annoyed about where I was going to finish, and I mean it honestly. But then we rolled down to the stop car. Andrew obviously had air time, but he had ran back then before we went to pass control and shouted at Donal, what did he do? And they, I think we had a 27 and they had a 22. And then Andrew's like, oh, jeez, because he says, they might have us. I go, oh, you're joking. You know, and then it was getting really nice. And we rolled down another bit then and sort of tabulated the times ourselves among the time cards and that. And it looked as though we had it. Like, but sure, we had sort of forgot that Egg was running 5 minutes ahead of us on the stage mm-hmm. and we didn't think about the rain. And then it was only when we rolled up then to the top and we were waiting then to check the times officially. Sure, time wouldn't come up then. Like, but yeah. As I said, like, I did say it to Andy. You know, I don't really mind about the end result. I was more just thanking Thomas and Kerry and their team for running a fantastic event. And, you know, me and Andrew were just happy just to get a clean run and show that we still had the pace in us, you know. I suppose that, like, last year in Cavan there, like, Eves pipped us by, I don't know what it was on the last stage, you know. Yeah. That was a bit of a sickener, like, you know, but we had a couple of issues that day as well, and we're still trying to iron out a few things with the car. But so it was, you know, we had a reason for it, but like we threw everything at it there that day. So like if someone beat us fair and square, that was fine. Like, you know, we didn't really mind. But yeah, made for a bit of drama, anyway, didn't it?
That's for sure. And like, you know, you mentioned there, like Thomas Traynor and Kerry Stevenson, like the face of the team that run the rally there the weekend. Like, what an exceptional rally! Like, that there should show a lot of people how to run an event.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's, you know, I often heard Frank Kelly saying, like, you know, you can tell when active club men run an event. You know, a competitor runs an event, you know, you can tell the difference, you know, maybe in the stages that they pick or the way they set up the chicanes and stuff like that there, you know. And I have to say, they've done a fantastic job. Picked three fantastic stages, and the most impressive thing was just how everything ran like clockwork. So it just goes to show you the amount of effort that the guys put in, like, you know, and so fair play to them, like, you know, it was a brilliant
event.
And
they all within, like, you know, 5 or 6 miles of Monaghan Town as well, too. Like, it wasn't like you were driving miles to get to the next stage, right? And it was a nice compact loop, and then that service area as well, too, you know, the Combi Lift factory, like, That's
great.
World class, never mind. Like, as good
yeah,
as
it is. Yeah. It is, yeah. No, it's fantastic. Like, it was just a great event. Like, you know, everything was so compact. The trailer park, service, scrutiny, all the usual places. The hotel was only over the road, and then the stages were all within a stone throw of the town there. Like, so, mm-hmm. No, it was really, really... I can't take my hat off to Thomas and the team. It was a brilliant event. Like, and I know I done COC at night navigations way back when, and that's only a drop in the ocean in comparison to trying to run a stage rally. So I can only imagine the stress and probably sleepless nights that you'd have, especially leading up to the rally. So it's something, I don't know how them guys do it, like, to take on that responsibility. Like, but in fairness, they pulled it out of the bag, and fair play to the club. And not just Monaghan Club, like, there was Cavan Club helped run the stage, and Donegal Club, and different clubs from the north, like, looking after the service areas. That's the way it is. Each club needs all the other clubs to run it, and all the timekeepers and marshals and everything as well. So I think that a lot of time people, that's probably forgotten, you know, that we wouldn't be even doing what we're doing and have the privilege of doing it without all of those people, like, you know. And I remember, was it down in... listening to Keith Cronin after he won West Cork. I think that was some of the most atrocious conditions. And like, first thing after he won his rally, the first thing he said was, you know, thanks to the marshals who stood out on Saturday, like, because it was just horrendous. Like, so, you know, it's good that the competitors don't forget that. Like, and I tend to always try and tip my hat to them whenever I can and say thank you and thanks for Marston. And when you're seeing them in the last loop round, me and Andrew always like wave out to them and say thanks very much, Marston, or whatever, you know, so because, it's like this whole job at times too.
Yeah, cause, and you know, especially with the crowds that was about there on Sunday as well too, like, it probably made the marshalling job that wee bit more difficult as well too, because like that was international crowds that was there. It wasn't a national round. Like, the service area, like the crowd it was about, the traffic on coming in and out of Monaghan, brilliant to see. Like, and that has to be a benefit to the whole town, the whole area. Like, people in buying petrol, you know, and you know, hot food bars, cafes, restaurants, all that kind of thing as well.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's luckily enough, like, Monaghan's really accepts the rally. Like, we great councillors and the Gardaí and everything else like that there. I know from being involved with the club down there for many years, like, there's great support. And yeah, I don't know, for whatever reason, I suppose maybe it's because Monaghan's just sort of a hotbed of rallying. Like, it always is a good entry. Like, you know, the modified, even sure, the battle that the two boys were having at the front of the field as well, it was brilliant to watch. So, yeah, so I think it was good to watch. Like, we were chatting to a few spectators when we were putting the car on the trailer, drawing a bit one section where the end of that first stage, where you come down onto the square left, there's a real fast bit downhill, and the boys had the guns out to hurt with the, you know, doing the speed, and they were saying we were second fastest down the hill after Josh, like, and then, like, we're four wheel drifting around a left hander at a wall, like, it's hairy enough stuff in fifth gear. Your boy was just saying, like, I don't even know who the guy was, to be honest with you. He was just saying it was unbelievable to watch, like, you know, and to think then you have 10 modified cars all within a tenth of a second all doing the same thing, I'd say it was class to watch, like, you know. Mm-hmm.
So thanks to Daniel there, as always, a pleasure. And then a couple of weekends ago, we had the Safari Rally, and Connor, like, what can we say, you know, it had everything, you know, drama, you know, the champion returning, it was just, every time you clicked onto the times, there was something happening all the time, and or what a rally it was, like, it's just provided a real throwback to the way we used to remember the Easter Classic.
That's it, you know, it was snorkels, it was mud, it was, everything. And come here, complete and utter masterclass by Callie Rovanpera. I don't think he put a single foot wrong the whole weekend. It was just incredible, the drive he had.
Yeah, because look, you know, we've seen all our cars with punctures and damaged bodywork and, you know, bits hanging off them and one thing and another. Callie, just for a guy that's just dipped his toe back in again, it just seemed very easy.
Yeah, he made it look incredibly easy, didn't he? You wouldn't have thought he was doing the Safari Rally. But I think the tempting conclusion to reach is that he was lucky, but that is absolutely not the case. I can definitely assure you of that. It was a supreme performance. And what was interesting for me was actually just how, I guess, proud he was of what he'd done, because it's not like Callie to necessarily talk himself up or really sort of emphasise how polished he thought his own performance was, but it was very clear that he reckoned he'd done the perfect safari at the end of the rally. So that was speaking very journalistically there, as a bit of a headline sort of grab, but that was a very interesting line. But yeah, utterly seamless performance. Toyota as well certainly got that event understood, haven't they? Historically always been very good in safari. Since his return to WRC, that's 4 years now they're yet to be beaten. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one next year, see if they can, or anybody can, topple them off that perch.
Yeah, because they, not only was he fast, but he never appeared to be on the limit at any stage, you know. And I think everybody else was trying to drive to the limit to try and keep up with him. And that, I think, made the difference, you know. He wasn't ragged, he was just Mr. Smooth.
For me, there's actually an element of Colin McRae in all this, whereas Colin was always famous for being this sort of on-the-edge, ragged driver who was sublime, and on his day, when he fancied it, basically, he could obliterate his rivals on stages. But he was equally good, particularly in the second half of his career, at being sensible and strategic and winning the really tough rallies. And to me, this is what Rovanpera is becoming. We all remember that insane run in Estonia, particularly last year, where Higgy won about, I can't remember how many stages it was all of them on Saturday and Sunday. It was ridiculous. And then you come here, where, as you said, he wasn't ever overreaching or pushing his limit. He just drove the perfect plan. He understood how to do it, and he's always been good at these kind of rallies. He won the Acropolis quite early on in his career. He's won Safari before. So yeah, I think that's quite interesting. But honestly, I'm struggling to think of many better wins for Cali. It was a really, really important result, and yeah, great to see him back, and nice to know, I guess, for his rivals that he's not competing full-time, because I dare say I think he'd be difficult to beat again this year if he was a full-time contender.
Yeah, Connor, he would be a real thorn in everybody's side if he was, you know, doing more events, wouldn't he?
Oh, look, it would take, I suppose, a bit of the fight out of the championship this year. At the moment, we're watching a battle between Neville and Evans to see who could be the potential next contender here for the championship crown. So, yeah, that fight just wouldn't exist if Callie was here full time again.
Mm-hmm, that's for sure. And then our own Aaron Johnson, along with Takamoto, like, what an event they had, you know, like, full of drama, but come away with a fine second overall.
And look, an incredible event for them, and particularly after what happened in Sweden, to have gone out leading the event in Sweden. And, you know, we saw Takamoto being interviewed at the end of that rally, and he was beyond gutted. And to bounce back and pretty much, you know, we've always seen Safari has been good for him the last couple of years, but like, he really just played a blinder himself and Aaron. A fantastic event, a fantastic weekend for them, and very little trouble, I think, what, bar two punctures? You know, again, kept their noses pretty clean the whole event.
Mm-hmm. And look, the two guys seem to have a lot of fun in the car as well. You know, we've seen the end car clip from, you know, the big jump and all that too. Like, yes, it's a very serious, and it is like mega important to them, but there's a bit of crack with it as well.
Yeah, Japan Airlines 2.0, that job, wasn't it? It was a nice good send, but you're right. I think, in fairness, actually, I think most of the crews nowadays have a good balance. I'm thinking particularly again of Callie and Yoni, but Taka and Aaron, it does seem to be a very good special relationship and understanding between each other. I can't remember what stage it was, but there was one stage where Taka pulled up to the end and his immediate thought was basically, well done to the team, well done to Aaron for a great job he did in that particular stage. So they both have a real understanding of what each other does, and I guess the difficulties of what each other are doing, and will always push each other on to achieve what they can. And I'm completely with Connor. In any case, second place in Safari is always going to be a good result. But given what had happened in Sweden, I think this was the perfect way to bounce back. So really nice to see Taka back on the podium.
That's for sure. And, like, you know, probably star of the year so far for Mo, another podium. Like, nobody would have given you the odds on that at the start of the year. Like, he has been exceptional so far this year.
Yeah, I have to say, I think a lot of people kind of suspected that he would be ready. There was this question about going into the year that was Formula going to be able to transform that sort of rejuvenated Rally 2 form into the Rally 1 car. And there were some that pointed to Japan at the end of last year, where obviously he went off in, I think, the second stage of the rally, and everyone's like, oh, okay, is this going to be a theme again? But that was a very particular set of circumstances. He's just driven impeccably this year. I would agree. I think he is definitely driver of the season to be third in the championship, two podiums, follow up your first one with another great drive in Safari. It's amazing. And he's providing us a great entertainment with all these Talladega Nights references and everything else. So yeah, he to me has been the real positive surprise of the season, because if you think about the atmosphere in M Sport now, yes, they're less likely to win a championship without Tanak, but I dare say the team is probably a bit more harmonious, perhaps, definitely certainly less stressed than it would have been last year. And it's worth pointing out that Puma did take a lot of flak last year for maybe not being the most reliable car, but it answered those critics well in Safari. Not really any significant problems beyond punctures, which are something the team can't really control. So, yeah, really, really encouraging performance. And we're now into Croatia, under Tarmac, and he's got a podium on snow. He's got a podium on gravel. The triple threat. We'll find out, won't we?
That's for sure. And, like, you know, Connor, like, just something Luke touched on. Like, his social media, it's nearly better than his rallying. He, you know, he's a master of it. The quotes, the way it's presented, it's so cool. You know, I even love he answers somebody will put something up on Twitter, and he'll come back at it. And his second language, like, French is his first language, English is his second language, but he knows all the references, he knows all the quotes. He gets the humour as well.
Oh, look, he's fully immersed in the pop culture. And you know, it's not just on the events as well. You see that in between events. Like, as you say, somebody will post something and there's a reply from Adrian. And, it, you know, it's funny. It's hilarious. He you know, he's a witty guy. And it's, you know, what we want to see. We want to see the characteristics. We want to see personalities and emotions coming out. You know, so it's great when we actually get that, you know, both on screen and off the screen.
Mm-hmm, that's for sure. And, like, you know, we've seen that, you know, the whole point system, we said earlier, you know, in the last time we spoke, that we're going to give it a few events to give it a chance to bed itself in. It's still been worked on, it's still not perfect, but, like, you know, who's going to remember that in a few years' time? We're going to remember Kelly Rovenpera, we're going to remember Taika, you know, we're going to remember for Mo getting the podium. That's the thing, that's the takeaway from the safari for me.
Yeah, the points debate is interesting. I'll be honest, I'm actually surprised at how much of it existed after safari. I knew there was going to be plenty after Sweden, where the winner Lappi didn't actually score the most points. But there was a bit of contention, I guess, with Thierry, because he was, I think, fifth overall and got the second most points. So I haven't really thought of factored that in. But I mean, I'm not the biggest critic of it. I can understand where the critics are coming from, but for me, it kind of has hit its brief in that it's making Sundays more interesting. I would definitely agree that there are ways that it can be improved, because it's not the simplest thing. And I guess the point the WRC is at now, it can't really afford to have too many complicated nuances if we're trying to grow this sport and introduce more fans to it. But yeah, it's one of those things. You're right. I don't think anybody's going to think, oh, who scored the second most points for the 2024 Safari Rally Kenya? That would be a very intense research deep dive to find the source of it with it. So yeah, Robin Perry won the rally. He's winner of the weekend. As far as I'm concerned, that's how it will be.
Mm-hmm. And Connor, Gus Greensmith, you know, what a rally he had. Everybody kind of wrote him off a few years ago when he was in, you know, with M Sport and one thing or another. You know, he's just a rich daddy's boy and one thing or another. I think he has proved himself that he's an exceptionally good driver as well.
Look, he's really, since he stepped back into the Rally 2 class, he's really come up another notch or another level. And he took the fight in the safari to Oliver Solberg, and he was the stronger driver that last weekend. And not only that, like, Gus was suffering from really bad stomach upset as well, so to fight an illness and to give it everything in the conditions of the safari rally, and not to be intimidated by the fact you've got Oliver breathing down your neck either, I thought it was an incredible drive for him, and really, you know, he's gone up another notch in my estimation. I thought it was just brilliant performance. And, you know, Luke, I think that's probably a quiz question from Kevin in the future, who scored the second most points on the Safari Rally.
Yeah, we know what Kevin's like with his quizzes, don't we? Yeah. He can have some quite nasty ones tucked in there. So, you know what, I'm going to make a mental note of that. It's locked in here. And we'll find out at some point in the future. Yeah, charity special coming up where we get some really daft questions, and yeah, that'll be in there.
So anyway, I think without further ado, I think we'll hear from Aaron Johnson.
Aaron, thanks for joining us. After, I suppose, what would be fair to describe as a disappointing Sweden, that was a fantastic result in the safari to bounce back with a second place.
Yeah, thanks, Connor, for inviting me on again. It's not so long since we were last chatting, like you say. And yeah, I think it's fair to say that Sweden was disappointing. Well, it was fantastic up until the point that it wasn't. But yeah, to come back in safari and put it to bed and finish on the podium, which was looking like what we could have achieved in Sweden if it wasn't for the mistake. But yeah, you're only as good as your last rally, and our last rally in Kenya was a good one. So we're back up and looking forward to the rest of the season now.
And there was a few extra weeks break between Sweden and safari compared to normally, you know, it's only a couple of weeks between most rounds of the WRC. Did that help in this case, or maybe after Sweden, were the two of you itching to get back into the car as quickly as possible?
Yeah, okay, so we had what, like a 5-week break, but really for us it was 2 weeks, and then we had a test in the south of Portugal. So we were back in the car pretty quickly, and then okay, home again for 2 weeks before traveling to Africa. But yeah, let's say there's not so much time for us to rest and recoup, and especially this season, during the winter, there was not so much time because we had a couple of test days in Finland on the snow already to prepare for Sweden. So a break like this is always welcome, but for me anyway, once you sit at home for a few days, or maybe it gets to a week, you're already looking to find out when your next trip away is and to get back into it. But yeah, after Sweden, a little break was welcome, and it was nice to just recharge and build up now for what is pretty much the most intense part of the season until the summer break now, with rallies coming thick and fast.
And Safari Rally this year, they brought it forward, and it was into the traditional rainy season. Like, obviously the weather there, very unpredictable. and very heavy rains when they come. So when you do the recce, and then obviously a few days then before the actual event, is there much of a change to the stages?
I would say normally, yes. Even more so in the previous years than it was this year, because like you say, it was only really 9 months from we were there last summer, and the rainy season, although it was expected, didn't really come. So I would say when it was a calendar year before we went back every summer, the roads changed even more than they did this year because of the rains and the way that that sculpted the roads and the plains. So this year maybe was the, let's say, more straightforward when it come to the roads with how much they had changed. Of course, they had changed to a certain degree, but less than we had experienced in previous years. And the rally was much drier, I would say, than we were expecting going out. And between recce, you know, 3 days before we come there at speed in the rally car, didn't really change so much, but it was quite dry and quite hot this year. So after the rains on Monday on recce, the mud changed quite quickly to fesh-fesh again. And, you know, we had this aspect of Kenya like we have in previous years. But, yeah, overall, I would say not massive changes between recce and rally this year anyway.
And I suppose the anticipation being this year that there would have been spot flooding or standing water, etc., because you're into the typical or traditional rainy season. So we saw the snorkel return, you know, certainly looking back at the old classic safaris, one of the things was obviously the bull bars and the snorkels that stood out. So the like we saw Toyota's was very aerodynamically matched to the car, looked really well on the car. But having the snorkel air creates a bit extra work for you, so you're involved in the activation of it. How does that come? Like, how do you know when is it set for a particular stage that you know you should be using it, or is it just as you're reading the road as you're going along?
Yeah, well, first of all, I totally agree with you. The snorkel and okay, we didn't have the bull bars this year, but maybe in the future it adds something to the cars. And for me anyway, as a fan, I like to see this sort of rugged and rough look that you can only bring to a safari car like years gone by. So yeah, I think it was a welcome addition for everybody. And the workload for the co-driver, okay, it's not so much extra when you're inside the car. Of course, you know, when you get to the end of the stage, there's more to clean and the air filter and the actual snorkel as well. So it just take a little bit more time on the liaison to make sure that everything was free of debris and clear moving into the next stage. But it's just like a normal water splash valve that we have used in the past in Sardinia and places like this where we're crossing fords and rivers. But you just press a button on the footrest and keep it pressed for as long as you want the air intake to be closed. And once you release it, it will reopen again.
And with regard to tire strategy, obviously, like those parts are quite rocky and rough, and we know, you know, there's an issue around punctures. But going into the event with the expectation that it would be a wetter event than it turned out to be, did that have any impact or effect on tire strategy, or is tire strategy chosen, you know, literally the day before the event starts?
Yeah, well, now in the WRC, on most gravel rallies, let's say, we don't have a service in the morning, so you have to already make your tire choice the night before. And let's say in Greece or Italy or somewhere like this, it's not really a big drama because you can quite, you know, accurately predict the weather conditions for the following day. But in Kenya, with the terrain being so localized and the showers coming, you know, in very small pockets, even though they can be quite heavy, it's very hard to predict. But in Kenya, we only had really one tire choice, which was the soft. And again, it was sort of the optimum tire that we expected to use before the event because of the expected rain. But even though it didn't come, the ground is quite soft and it's not so abrasive on tire wear that it meant that the soft was still the best option throughout the weekend.
And obviously as well, you know, with carrying spares, there's a risk reward strategy to taking two spares or one. I think it's about 23 kilos or something per tire, roughly extra weight in the car. Of the likes of Safari, do you just play safe and it's constantly you have two spares, or was there you know, a decision made to maybe go for you know, reducing the weight in the car to increase the speed a bit?
Yeah, of course, you know, the weight is important to keep it as low as possible to maximize the performance, but it's sort of a catch 22 in Kenya compared to somewhere like Finland or Estonia, where it's all about speed. You know, you have to have a little bit more mechanical sympathy and drive around some of these issues that you may have that two tires could ultimately keep you in the rally from. Like for us, we had a double puncture, and if we didn't have the two spares, it would have been day done. So I think almost everybody on every loop carried two spares, apart from Oit and EP when they retired on Friday. They decided to go out on Saturday morning with only one spare, and ultimately paid the price because they both got punctures on the first stage and had to, you know, drive with even more caution to make sure that they didn't pick up another flat wheel before they got back to the safety of service. But yeah, for Kenya, I think it's fair to say that two spares is the best option purely because of the conditions that you face and the risk of punctures being so high.
And Safari is notorious for the fesh-fesh, which we're all aware of now. You know, that really fine, dusty, sandy mud. And Taka, you know, had an issue in the car where it was getting into his eyes. But as a co-driver, where you're constantly talking, if the dust is floating around in the car, like, you know, are you suffering from dry mouth while you're trying to get the pace notes out, etc.?
Yeah, it is an issue not only in Kenya, but in most of the hot summer gravel rallies. Thankfully, the boys and girls in the factory back in Finland have made a fantastic job of sealing our car, and the ingress of dust is quite minimal. But yeah, in Kenya, let's say it's worse than normal with the scooping through the fesh-fesh and the dust being so, so fine that it can still make its way in. From the co-driver side, of course, you know, when you're speaking at the speeds that we are speaking at, and if you breathe in dust, it's not ideal. But let's say at least from the co-driver side, when you're looking down, it's not really an issue to get it in the eyes like it is compared to the drivers. Plus, on my helmet anyway, I have a sun visor that I can easily pull down if I need it, that to protect your eyes even further. But yeah, you just have to sort of, let's say, get on with the job. And if you do breathe in a little bit of dust, there's no point in crying about it. You just have to keep spitting out the notes.
That's it. It's all part of the day job.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sleeping Warrior is probably in the notorious stage that we hear about. And they add, I think, added an extra 10K, was it? Or they changed part of the stage. But, like, you had everything there from slippery mud, standing water, and very, you know, rocky sections that were causing punctures and issues. Like, when you're on the stage, is it worse than it, you know, is it actually in real life, is it worse than what we see on the TV?
No, I think it's fair to say Sleeping Warrior now over the last 4 years has gained a reputation for being the most treacherous and the most difficult stage of the rally, and it definitely has to be respected by the crews. Like you say, they changed the ending of the stage a little bit, and unfortunately, pre-event, we didn't get any organizer video to sort of have an idea of what we were going to face. But the bit that they did remove from last year was, let's say, the most rough and toughest part of the stage compared to the beginning. So we were thinking that at least they have removed this part and it can't really be much worse. But it turned out to be even, let's say, more technical and more tricky. And there was a lot of loose rocks. And it was on this new section that we picked up the double puncture with a rock hidden in the grass that, when we watched the recce video back, we took the same line that we did during the recce, and there was nothing there. So whether, you know, something was brought forward by the animals, or, you know, maybe flicked by a car in front of us into the grass. Just it's one of them things, and it's just the unpredictability of safari. But I think Sleeping Warrior definitely is this make or break stage on the safari.
I know personally one of the things I love watching is those behind the scenes videos of you guys prepping just before the stage start, and we always see the co-driver out checking tire pressures. What is going on there? Like why the need to adjust for every stage, etc.? What are you looking for? Or what are you doing there?
Yeah, the main thing that why you adjust for every stage is obviously the length. For example, you know, the first stage might be 20 kilometers, second stage 10, and the third stage, like Sleeping Warrior, was when it was 37. So you're just using the distance and sort of trying to predict the pressure that the tires will climb to come, you know, halfway through or coming towards the end of the stage, because obviously you don't want to start too low to risk the puncture in the beginning, but you also don't want to finish too high where you're losing performance by the tire moving. So it's a fine art, and it's something that we discuss in detail with our engineers after the recce and make a plan for this. So we just try to keep on top of it at the end of every stage before heading into the next one.
And next up is WRC Croatia. You've already had your tarmac test in Croatia. I think you had a couple of days break literally from Kenya, and you were back into tarmac spec car. What's the thoughts? What's the feelings? What's the plans for Croatia?
Yeah, there's no rest for the wicked, as they say. Got home lunchtime Monday from Kenya and was back in Dublin Airport 9 o'clock Tuesday morning to head to Croatia to test yesterday, Wednesday. So, yeah, the test went well. It was really nice to be back in a car that was as low as it can go and hard tires on a sealed surface. So, tarmac, I have to say, especially coming from Ireland, is the preferred surface for me, and it's one that I really enjoy. And I think when the car is low and the tires are hard and the weather's nice, it's a great feeling to push the cars to their absolute limit. And the speeds are so high now with the hybrid and with the aerodynamics that it's a really nice surface to drive on. It's a totally different experience than we got in Kenya, that had a car obviously so high and quite soft to deal with the ruts and the bumps. But yeah, looking forward to Croatia, and hopefully we can build on last weekend in Kenya.
Huge thanks once again to Aaron for joining us and to, I suppose, bring us up to date. And it was fantastic to hear from straight away after the safari, you know, and a fantastic second place for him and Taka. Also had the opportunity to catch up with Jamie McMillan. So Jamie has moved from M Sport. He's now chief engineer for Itanix car with Hyundai, and it was a chance just to hear from Jamie, I suppose, how the season's gone for them. Not the start of the season that I was looking forward to anyway. And whilst we have Thierry Neuville leading the championship for Hyundai, they've still had a fairly touch year despite the successes. So I thought it was a good chance to hear from Jamie on this. So Jamie, you're back in Germany now after a tough safari event. The team surely must be very happy. You've had two wins out of three rounds of the championship. You're only 4 points short of Toyota in the Manufacturers' Championship. You know, yes, there's been a few technical issues around the car, but overall, I can only imagine that there's good confidence about this year within Hyundai.
Yeah, for sure. I think the first two events were a good confidence sort of boost at the start of the season, let's say. Kenya had its troubles, but I think the team are working quite well together, and I've been able to join a nice time where it's sort of going through a bit of a transition as well, with some different infrastructure, and you know, everybody's maybe very welcome, and the team are, yes, I think at the minute certainly going from strength to strength. And I think with a new point structure as well, it means it's really quite close between all the different manufacturers and also the drivers. So there's always that other sort of question mark, and someday, you know, a sort of tactical element of it as well to understand and to think about whether you can really push, or you need to bank the points from the previous day. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes moving forward. And ultimately it hasn't been such a strong start for Oid, but clearly the car has the pace, and I think that's good for both us as a team and for Oid to see that the car can win, and already on tarmac and on snow in Sweden, and then also in gravel we were winning plenty of stages, and also did quite well in the power stage. So the pace is there. It's just a matter for us to make sure that he gets comfortable in the car and we can keep it as reliable as possible, and then we can start building some bigger points.
Certainly from the outside looking in, the car seems to have improved performance. You know, if we look at just generally the speed and where EP was on Friday, and then, you know, on Sunday on the power stage, it was a 1-2-3 for Hyundai. You know, certainly the car seems to be coming along from that side of things.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, all three events now, it's nice to see that it's quite the pace has been carried over for all the different surfaces and different conditions. So, you know, another challenge going into Croatia now, where it's going to be a little bit lower grip. There's going to be some more cutting than you would have in Monte Carlo, a little bit bumpier as well. So yeah, because Monte was predominantly dry this year, so it's going to be another challenge for the guys and for us to get the most out of the car and see how competitive we can be. But at least it looks like it's promising from a pace perspective. But yeah, it's a long season ahead, and for sure Toyota will be pushing to keep developing their car and trying to bring. So yeah, we certainly can't take our eye off the ball. It's by no means a finished article. So yeah, plenty of work still to do.
And you would have conducted your engineer's recce before the event in Safari. Like when you're sitting at home watching it on Rally TV, etc., you know, it looks rough, but it's hard to, you know, get a judgment of how bad it actually is. Like, what is it like?
Yeah, Kenya is, yeah, completely unique, I think. You know, there's no way you could get through any of those stages in a normal saloon car or a hatchback. You know, you have to have a four-wheel drive, and you need to have massive ground clearance. Some of the roads we were going through, yeah, you wouldn't even see them as roads. For sure, you would turn around and go the other way if you encountered them in a normal car. So, yeah, I don't think you get any perspective of that unless you're actually out there doing these stages. And you know, even a few weeks ago, some of the stages were completely destroyed, and the organizers worked really hard to repair them and rebuild them. And I think that's actually why some of these larger rocks were uncovered at certain parts of the rally, because that's how they sort of build some of the roads over there after they've been destroyed. So it's completely unique, and the cars, you don't realize until you drive the stages how hard and how tough the cars need to be.
And look, you just described the conditions there, and look, it would be fair to say the Safari really has been a tough event for the Hyundais the last couple of years, and has, you know, exposed maybe some of the weaknesses within the car. And one of the things I have to say, Hyundai were very quick to put their hands up and say, yes, look, there is an issue around the gearbox, etc. So how much of a frustration is it there that the team know where they can identify and move ahead, but I suppose waiting to get parts homologated?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, whenever the cars are homologated, you only get so many jokers each year, so you need to manage how you're gonna work them, and whether you're gonna, you know, put them all on reliability aspects or whether some need to be used for performance. So, you know, ultimately, it's massively frustrating for the team, but also for EP as well. You know, we all sort of felt for him whenever another driveline issue hit him this year. So, especially being in such a good position, so Oitz was a little bit more unlucky, I would say. I think, he carried the right amount of speed for the corner, but it didn't give him enough time to react to what was in the road ahead of him, whereas the other guys maybe carried a little bit less speed, and they were just about able to move out of the way of the big rock that ultimately ended his rally. So, yeah, that was very frustrating, but I wouldn't say that was necessarily linked to the car side. You know, I don't think we could have done anything in that aspect. And again, even for Thierry's suspension issue on the first pass of the power stage, like that boulder got pulled out by EP, so he didn't see it. He was first on the road, and this was one of the stages that had just been recently repaired. And yeah, you could see from Jordan's onboard how big this rock was, and he was able to, he had a little bit of time to adjust and to change his line. But you know, Thierry on a push had no chance. So I think anybody else coming over that piece of road would have suffered the same fate. So yeah, there's elements of the cars that could be made stronger. Obviously, we can see that, but there is also some element of it that is down to luck and just, you know, really, really bad timing from the, I don't know, the element of it that is unknown. And yeah, that's all I can say, I guess.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And we saw this year, obviously, the return of the snorkels. Now, part of that was the rally was brought forward to Easter time. I suppose for you and I growing up, we always associated the Circuit of Ireland and the Safari Rally being on Easter weekend. But snorkels were back, expected heavy rains, which didn't materialise. But compared to M-Sport and Toyota, Hyundai took a somewhat novel approach in the sense that the snorkel wasn't a permanent fixture for the event.
Yeah. So from our side, you know, anything that you put on the car is added weight, and there's always an element of an unknown or something that can break, or and also it's adding some drag to the car. So for us, it was pretty clear if we weren't going to need it, then you know we weren't going to fit it. So we only put it on for Saturday afternoon, whenever at least the forecast looked like it could be quite torrential in places, and then it gave the drivers the option whether they needed to use it or not. And in the end, it wasn't needed. You know, the stages were actually near enough all dry, apart from occasional mud patches. So the other teams have different ways of approaching it, and I can understand that point of view. But for us, it was quite easy to fit the snorkel in a 30-minute service. So we just made the judgment day by day and loop by loop, and in the end, yeah, I think it was the right decision.
And we saw the Rally 2 cars actually had bull bars. Considering EP's incidents with zebras and other, you know, wildlife issues for some of the other drivers, do you think the bull bars is something that could or should be introduced for next year?
To be honest, I think the Rally 1 cars are quite well built and quite strong, that they can survive these sorts of impacts. Maybe the Rally 2 isn't quite as strong in that aspect. And EP did unfortunately run into some wildlife and it damaged his screen, but ultimately he was able to finish the stage. He just had to slow down due to some cracks on the screen. So in the end, it cost him a little bit of time, but even if you put bull bars on, you know, the animal can still go up over those and onto the screen, and that's ultimately what costs you the time. So it didn't actually damage the coolant package or make him retire. So it hasn't been needed in the last sort of few years, and you know, the time of year doesn't really change how many animals are around. So for me, I think it's nice to have for the Rally 2, and it makes them a little bit more reliable. But for the Rally 1 guys, I think it's fine as we are now. We're a little bit stronger anyway.
And I suppose one of the other challenges was tire strategy, you know, particularly in a rough event like that, and the high risk of punctures. And I suppose where somebody's returned under Super Rally, such as Oit or EP, you can take more of a gamble to maybe run with one spare tire. But how much goes into that decision making, you know, that risk reward piece around, yeah, carrying an extra spare or not?
Yeah, you know, for Kenya, it's a little bit, or it's made a little bit more straightforward, because predominantly you're going to run the soft tire, so at least you don't have a second compound to always factor into your calculations as well. So at least we knew it was always near enough always going to be the soft. And then, yeah, it's just a matter of whether we want to carry one spare or two. And, you know, you've got plenty of data from previous years of what the stages are like and how many guys have had punctures. So, you know, we know what to expect. And also from doing the engineer's recce, some of the stages can change year on year. And we've seen that quite a bit this year, to be honest. They were actually, some areas were a bit smoother. So, you know, we knew we could maybe gamble on certain loops where we didn't think the puncture risk was so high. And we've seen that with, I think, EP on Friday morning, went for it. And in the end, it's what sort of risk you want to take. So we know how much the added weight would cost you over a loop of stages, depending on how long the loop is and what sort of character and content is in the different stages, also affects how much time you will lose. So, you know, we make those calculations before the event, and we, you know, we can also discuss with the driver and say, okay, this is how much we think you'll lose. And then it's really factoring in these conditions, it's factoring in the puncture risk. So, because it's not only the time you lose from having a puncture or, you know, having to change it and all the rest, it's then what you actually lose from knowing that you've now got no spare tires in the boot, so you can't push as much as you would if you had two. So that's another element that you always have to think about. But in the end, Sunday morning, the first stage was really, really tough. And in previous years, we always thought, you know, whenever we're doing the recce, that this was going to have so many punctures. But the Sunday drive before was probably always a little bit more measured, whereas this year the guys have to push in a Sunday as well. So we seen a few punctures on the first stage, but the next two were quite smooth and less of a risk. So yeah, we knew if we got through the first one on Sunday morning with no punctures, then five was the right choice. So yeah, that's what we went for. And then second pass, it's a little bit different for the road conditions, because there's some deeper ruts. So generally you have more chance of sort of damaging a sidewall or debating a tire. So you need to generally, you know, go for a slightly safer approach.
And next round is Croatia. So fourth round of the championship, obviously Thierry's leading the championship. So from that perspective, things are going well for the team. But for Oit, his championship hasn't got up and running. I can imagine how he wanted or had planned. So does strategy change for Oit and his approach for Croatia, or from the team's approach to Croatia?
At the moment, I don't think so. I think you need to, you know, it's a long season ahead, and ultimately he's shown the pace. You know, we had some sort of minor issues in Monday, which affected the pace, unfortunately. So he wasn't really able to show what he could do. And the guy's been working hard to improve that. And in Sweden, he showed he had the pace. Just ultimately, a small mistake had some big consequences. And again, in Kenya, and at least Kenya, we were able to salvage some decent points on Sunday. So clearly he knows, you know, the car and him together have the pace to go and win stages. So Croatia is a different challenge. I think we need to see what the conditions are doing, see how the stages develop. And it's going to be a little bit tricky with the road position. It's not the best being further down the field. Generally, you want to be starting in the first couple. So you know, I think we need to be sensible with the approach as well. There's no point chasing points at this point time of the season, because yeah, you know, one more crash or one more off or whatever, you know, can really have a big effect. So, you know, we need to just be consistent, get some good points, and yeah, have a push again on Sunday and see how far we can go. So, you know, no matter what happens in Croatia, the road position should still be decent in Portugal, and then we've got a really sort of nice run of events where I think the car and Oit have proven they've been fast in the past. So yeah, I think then if we start to get a bit of momentum going and a bit of get into a good rhythm, then you know it can change very quickly the overall standings, and could be looking a bit better.
And the team's been conducting pre-event tests in Croatia this week, and one of the tests is also with Hankook, who are going to be the tire supplier for next year. So Andreas has been testing the tires with him. So I suppose from your side, are you very limited in those tests, because there's probably not much you can do with your own setup changes and that sort of thing? So I suppose, you know, how does it impact you getting your own setup ready for in advance of the event?
Yeah, so it's actually really tricky for Andreas ultimately, because that's his one sort of test day for Croatia, and yeah, the team just have to manage that with the amount of test days we have over the season. So yeah, the Hankook day will be driven by them, and we are, at least, sorry, the Andreas will drive it, but you know they make all the decisions. So yeah, we won't be touching the setup at all, and he just has some seat time to sort of feel how the car maybe evolves over you know, the stage condition, whether it's getting you know, some more cuts or getting warmer during the day, you know, these sorts of things he can still get a feeling for. So seat time is really important, but Yeah, in the end, it's Hankook. We'll just tend to cycle through a few different tire options and then get Andreas's feedback and see which ones he prefers. And I'm sure they'll do some blind tests as well. Or yeah, they'll tell him what he's working on in the morning, and in the afternoon go back through and cycle back through and get his sort of blind feedback and do some longer runs. So yeah, unfortunately, it's not really you know, at the end of the day, it's not a test day for us, it's for them. So we won't get so much out of it, but at least the seat time can be important for Andreas.
And speaking of Andreas, you know, he's still adjusting to the hybrid cars. You know, is there much of a learning curve, like with the regeneration for the hybrid unit? Does he have to kind of relearn how to drive and how to brake the Rally One cars, or am I overthinking that?
No, it's definitely an element of it. You know, I think even just understanding when you have boost available and when you don't, you know, that's that changes how the car behaves, both from, you know, maybe the differential balance or mid corner, or, you know, how the whole car reacts to the driver's input. So that's something that he just needs experience, and he needs to come to terms with. Again, unfortunately, actually on the Hankook test day, we'll be running without the hybrid, because next year in theory we don't have that. So yeah, he's actually struggling there as well to learn that element of it. But you know, I think generally, and he's spoken about it as well, it's also just the cornering speed and just how much you can throw the car into the apex. And I think, you know, it's really hard for him, because to find the limit, you normally have to push a little bit over it, and he can't really be afforded that luxury of making a mistake, or you know, this at this time of the season when he's not in the car so often, and he doesn't have a full season in the car. So yeah, he's in a difficult position, but he needs to just try and drive sensible and smart and build a pace gradually.
Thanks to Jamie for taking the time to catch up with us. And I know Jamie's very busy. He's you know, settling into a new role with a new team. And it's great to have the opportunity for him to come on and talk to us. And a huge thank to Hyundai for Jamie, you know, giving Jamie the permission to do so as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It really is, you know. And then last weekend we had Quattro River Rally, and that was Connor and Eamon were using that then as a warm-up for the next round of the JWRC, which will take place now in 2 weeks time, or well, 1 week's time really from now. And you know, they weren't there for the result. It was the getting the experience, you know, getting the feel for the roads again. And I think that, you know, they set some great times over the weekend as well.
Yeah, look, you know, it was about them getting back out onto tarmac and in the Rally 3 car as well to get settled and get a bit of seat time. And, you know, when everything was going smoothly and issue free, like they were setting some top four stage times and certainly mixing it with the Rally 2 cars.
Yeah, great to see. And then this weekend coming up, we have the first round of the ERC Rally Hungary. And we have the John and Owen's out there. And then as well as that, then the junior section, we have and Jack Brennan and Aoife Raftery, and like, it's going to be epic, because like, there's such a strong lineup there. Like, it's just probably better than WRC2, the lineup of Rally 2 cars is going to be there, never mind the juniors.
Oh, look, incredible opportunity for John. He's out in the Rally 2 Fiesta. You know, he's going to be up against the likes of Hayden Padden, Mads Osberg, the Finnish champion, Mika Häkkilä. You know, like, some incredible names there. It's a good chance for John to shine.
That's for sure. You know, like, it's going to be epic. You know, like, Hayden Padden, he's been on the show a couple of times, a real good man. I'm really looking forward to seeing how the time starts rolling. Yeah, it's going to take John maybe an event or maybe two just to get, you know, get to the cutting edge, but there's no doubt in my mind he has the ability to do it. And then the junior section, you know, Hannah and Aoife, you know, getting that partnership struck up again. Jack Brennan and John McGrath, like, what a, you know, an opportunity, like, for Jack at whatever, 19 years of age, going out there and doing that. That's fantastic. It really is, isn't it?
It is. And again, it's going to be competitive. You know, Jack and Aoife are both taking part in the Rally 4s in the Peugeot 208s. I think there's something like 20 ARF Rally 4s in that category. You even have the likes of Max McRae, which is great because Max is going to be in a similar car. And it will draw a bit more attention, and a bit more, I suppose, spotlight onto that class as well.
That's, you know, it's going to be brilliant. So, like, we'll be definitely keeping an eye on that over the weekend. And then closer to home, we have Rally Nuts, second round of the BRC. We have a good few of our guys over there competing in it. And also a round of the historic British Championship. And then, you know, and then that's on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Wally Lucknow down in Carrickmacshire. Like, that's going to, you know, like, there's even some guys doing the both of the events, you know. So, like, you have to tip your hat to them. Like, Kieran Grogan and Kian Caldwell is hoping to do both events. Like, that's a big undertaking.
That's a huge task. And, you know, everything has to go 100% right, from making sure they finish the Rally Nuts in you know, in perfect order, and then make sure there's no delays with the boat and everything else. So, you know, they're under a bit of pressure to do both, but fair play to them.
Yeah, like, both of them are, you know, it's great to see such young crews wanting to do it, you know, as well too. And I think maybe Casey Jake Holton's in the same position as well. He's hoping to do both as well too. So, you know, brilliant. You know, I really, I think that's class doing that then. And the round two of the BRC, like, well, you know, Cronin back on the list, Ingram, and, you know, and the Polo on the list. It's like, there's a lot, like, you know, there's so many names there. Like, Austin Price is, you know, is going to be keen to, you know, home stages and all that too. Marion with the Yaris and on gravel, you know, oh, there's so many talking points there as well.
Yeah, and I can't remember if you mentioned William Crichton as well.
Oh,
into that.
Yeah,
mix,
God,
you know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's going to be like, it's going to be quick. Like, it's 100K over seven stages. Like, it is, it's a one-day sprint, you know, compared to, I suppose, a tarmac championship round. So it's going to be quick, and it's going to be quick from the get-go.
Yeah, and the some of the stages are, like, you know, the WRC classics, that, you know, the names that kind of, you know, that puts the hairs up in the back of your neck, even thinking about them. So, like, yeah, that's going to be some battle, I would imagine. Like, yeah, I wouldn't want to have to try and call it.
No, I genuinely wouldn't be able to. Yeah. Honestly, wouldn't. And, you know, we're hoping Keith gets, you know, a smooth run. Didn't have a great start, you know, in the first round of the BRC. Hopefully, all goes well, and you know, it's a good competitive fight at the top. You know, I'd love to see Chris and William and Keith slugging it out for that number one spot.
That's for sure. And, like, you know, there's so many other names you can mention.
Yeah.
That's going to be thereabouts as well too. And then, you know, the historics is there as well too, and we have some local interest there as well too. So, yeah, lots of things there to keep your eyes on. And then Wally Lachlan Sunday morning, that kicks off, and, like, you know, a good entry there as well too. And, like, it's good. You wouldn't want to have to try and pick a winner from that. Like, Jordan Hone won round one, he's first in the road, you know, and the forestry sometimes is first in the road ideal, maybe not, but yeah, it's good. It's, you know, and Derek Mackerel, a young guy as well too, coming up to the ranks, improving with every time he's out in that R5 Fiesta.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've Andrew Purcell there too, not far away. So, you know, it certainly would be interesting. But what's nearly interesting me more about the Willie Lachman is the junior category. It's phenomenal, the entry. I think, what, there's 24, 25 cars?
Yeah, like, you know, the junior 1000, you know, we've long extolled, you know, the so much positivity coming, you know, with the young people coming up through the sport now. And, like, they had a day there recently with the academy, and, like, you know, the older heads now, you know, the Wall Crichtons, the John Armstrongs, and these guys going there giving them advice. And, you know, like, it must be brilliant being 13 or 14 years of age, going and meeting these guys that are competing in, you know, the World Championship and then the European Rally Championship. Like, you talk about meeting your heroes, this must be something special for them.
Absolutely. Look, and you're not only meeting them, but you're also seeing there's a path to emulate them, you know, to basically in 5, 6, 7 years time, be where they are.
Yeah, this could be you, you know. Like,
yeah.
That's just class, you know. So we want to wish everyone a safe and enjoyable weekend, you know, and, like, there's going to be loads of news there. So we've a lot to talk about next week, the way things are going. We also just want to take the opportunity to thank Luke Barry for being a co-host once again. You know, like, what can we say about Luke that we haven't already said, Connor? He's just a pleasure to have on.
I look, absolute pleasure. He's a bit of crack, and just his wealth of knowledge. Like, what I love about Luke is we can talk WRC, we can talk BRC, but he can talk Irish rallying.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few people outside the country knows as much about our, you know, competitors as he does.
That's for sure, you know. So once again, thanks to all our guests tonight, in this episode. And please like, share, rate, subscribe. All those things make a huge difference, please. And that's it for season 3, episode 20. Until the next time, take care, speak soon, and bye.